Alrighty, gang. Here's to nights that turn into mornings and friends that turn into family. Cheers!
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Friendship IRL podcast. I'm your host, Alex Alexander. My friends, they would tell you, I like to ask the hard questions. You know who I am in the group. I'm the person that's saying, okay, I'm going to ask this question, but don't feel like you have to answer it. And now I can be that friend for you too. How much time do you spend with the people that matter to you most? This could be your partner, your kids, your family, your friends, your community. And the answer to that question is probably going to vary depending on the season of life that you're in. I'm going to talk a little bit later about a study called the American Time Use Survey that shows the trends based on different ages and who you spend the most time with. But I think what's most important to remember is that, like with anything else on this podcast, so often if we're on autopilot and we follow the trajectory of what we should be doing in any season of our life, that might mean that we really are not carving out time for the people that we say matter to us most. Today's episode, I am talking with Katrina McGee. She is a career break coach and sabbatical expert and the author of the book, Taking a Career Break for Dummies. Yes, one of those for dummies books with the yellow cover. As a certified master coach with an MBA, Katrina empowers mid-career professionals to create transformative and daring breaks, ultimately leading to a more fulfilling and satisfying life. Her clients return from their breaks recharged, inspired, happily employed, and forever changed. On their time off, her 70-plus clients have traveled the world, launched businesses, changed careers, and more. Katrina was inspired by her own 20-month career break, where she saved $40,000 in just 18 months to quit her corporate job and travel the world. This conversation that I had with Katrina was such a delight for me. Because as I've talked about many times before on this podcast, community, connection, friendship, these are massive priorities in my life and Michael's life. We have built a lot of ways where we use our resources, our time, our attention, our money, to facilitate the connections that matter to us most in our life. On this podcast, we talk a lot about how to carve out small chunks of time, a weekend here, a few hours there, a 30-minute phone call. And we talk about that in this episode as well. But if you've ever wondered, how do I carve out more time? How do I get off autopilot and create a life where I am spending time with the people who matter most to me? Longer chunks of time, weeks, months, seasons, then this episode will be really inspiring for you. Now, I want to be really upfront. And if you are listening to this episode in particular, and you are thinking to yourself, Alex, I am barely surviving. There is no way I could take 18 months to quit my job and travel the world. I want to acknowledge that that is indeed a lot of privilege. However, this episode does talk about smaller chunks of time. It also talks about how to take this as inspiration, as life goals, and slowly start to build up to these longer chunks of time with the people that matter to you. I will say firsthand that Michael and I never were able to carve out the chunks we can now a decade ago. And I'm sure that a decade in the future, we will be prioritizing this in a way that we have even more chunks of time. And you can do that too. With that, let's dive into today's episode.
Hi, Katrina. I'm so excited you're here to share your personal experiences, but I actually also think that your work is probably going to come in to this episode a little bit too. Like when we had chatted before and we got to the very end, and I heard that you were a career break coach, I was like, oh, wow, this adds an entire other layer to this episode. So thank you so much for being here.
Yes, Alex, thank you for having me on. I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm just excited for this.
I mean, who doesn't like talking about their people and how we're figuring out ways to make this work and enjoy? Honestly, I think whether we all want to admit it or not, like the stuff that really gives life color and brings us joy, just spending time with the people we care about.
Absolutely. In a way, it's so much of how I feel holistically, you know, year to year is largely and intimately related to how much connecting with people I care about, both new and old, did I do.
So to start off, because I really do think that your work plays into this episode, not just the fact that you're a digital nomad, but like actually what you do. Can you talk a little bit about being a career break coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I help people take breaks. So whether you feel it's impossible or you know you want one and you just want to make sure it's fantastic and that you don't ruin your life or go broke in the process, I'm here for that, right? So I lead people into and or through breaks lasting anywhere from 2 months to 2 years and provide them with the structure so that they can hit the ground running, have the most amazing experience, problem solving if they get stuck somewhere. But I am really here to be a huge advocate for breaks. I think they are a catalyst for a life well lived. And I think to your point, it's very related to what we're going to talk about today because taking a break was a massive moment for me. I took a 20-month break to travel the world back in 2013, and it changed my life in many ways, professionally and personally, and for the better. And the connection that I was able to experience because of that break really changed how I view time, how I value my time, and how I invest it in the people and relationships that matter to me.
Okay, so people are going to want to know, I'm going to ask this question. When you say a 20-month break, did you work at all?
I did not work at all.
I mean, I'm over here just taking a moment to really think about the fact that taking 20 months. So what did you do over the course of your 20 months?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. So I knew going into it, so I'd been working with a life coach to find like a third career because I was feeling very unhappy and misaligned with career number one. The MBA didn't fix it. Neither did career number two. Mm. So it's like, what is missing? And in that search, I had this realization a few months in that I just wanted to take a break and travel the world. But because I was working with a life coach, I was very intentional and I had a lot of insight into what is it that I really want and need to experience beyond just travel for travel's sake or just doing nothing for doing nothing's sake. It was more intentional than that. So the first part of my break, I spent with my then boyfriend. I convinced him to come with me. He was so generous with his time. But we did a three and a half month road trip through the US. So new places, old places, saw the Grand Canyon, saw arches, white sands, like all these amazing, you know, beautiful places, went to cities, ate a lot of great food, and just went in a big fat circle through the US. And then I actually went home for a little over 2 months to spend time with my family, which was really important to me. So, you know, being able to be present for them when they were having regular life moments instead of just the hustle and bustle of holidays or, you know, trying to cram it all in this very unnatural, like 3-day, 5-day, 7-day period. Once I'd had my fill of home, it was time to go abroad. So I hopped a plane from DC directly down to Medellin, Colombia. And I started my international trek and I traveled around the world. I traveled pretty slowly for half of that trip. Sometimes it was fast, like being in a country for 3 days, 5 days. But there were a couple times, like when I was in Argentina, I rented an Airbnb and just lived there for a month to get a flavor of Buenos Aires and to really appreciate the city and get to know it in a more intimate way. And then when I was done traveling, it was like, okay, I still am here for the exploration. So I actually moved to Denver, and this might come up later, but I actually moved in with one of my best friends that I would visit once a year, but I never lived with her before. And she had a basement apartment. She was like, you could come live with me. And I was like, what?
Okay. Love, yes.
Right. Yeah. It was so amazing. And so I spent 4 to 5 months in Denver, taking community ed classes, doing informational interviews, networking, having smaller adventures, and just really exploring what do I want the next chapter of my life to look like once I go back to work? And what is true for me now that I've had all of this change and all of this experience and all of these travels? Like, how am I different? And what do I want to change about my life going forward to be more in alignment with how I really want to be living and the life I want to have?
I love this because so much of what I talk about on the podcast is kind of this idea that, like, right, we say a lot of people, if you ask them, if you get them to stop for a second and talk about what's most important to them, it's often their people, whether that is family or, you know, their partner and children or their friends, culmination of all of it, like, it's their people. And I love this quote by Ramit Sethi, and he says, show me your calendar and your bank account, and it'll tell you what is really important to you. Because a lot of people will say that their people are important to them, but then, you know, it's hard to get there for the weekend. It's hard to prioritize the time. They don't want to spend money on that party or that plane ticket. Like, we say that this matters to us. I talk a lot about how in our everyday lives, we can make small shifts to make this more of a priority, to like have our time in our bank account and our attention and our energy align with the fact that we say that this is a priority to us. But that's so hard to do when you're just in the day to day. What you're talking about is like stopping everything, resetting all your patterns, and coming out the other side. And I'm sure that's so powerful for people, because you're right, it's hard to make those little shifts in our day-to-day when you're so inundated with like what's already comfortable, even if you don't like it. It's just that it's your normal pattern.
Absolutely. It's the autopilot, right? It's the default.
Yeah. A lot of people living on autopilot. So when you were doing this, something that stood out to me is you talked about going home and living real life with your family. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I agree with you that there's really something about living real life with your people instead of just flying in for 2 days.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, so much. When you come in for those 2 days, those 7 days, you're the special guest, right? We're doing unnatural things. We're shifting time around. We're putting a lot of energy into sort of celebrating your existence, but in a kind of unnatural way. And it's fun, but real life happens in between those really big moments. And, you know, as a kid, I remember having like one couch and a chair in our family room, and we would watch, like, you know, The Cosby Show or, you know, Married with Children or something. But like, we would sit together on the couch and watch TV after, you know, having dinner. And it was just so much communal time where it wasn't about the event, it wasn't about the thing, but it's having little conversations. It's asking someone how their day went and really being able to listen and really feeling like the nuances of that day matter. It's not the highlight reel of the last 6 months or the last 12 months that you missed. What's like the three things you need to know, but it's like these little moments that are going to add up to be the story of my life. And as an adult who went away to college, very far away from where I grew up, like plane ticket kind of far, and then moved away even further once, you know, I started working, I had never lived with my family since then. And I feel like there were so many micro moments I was missing. And, you know, parents age, if you're lucky to have parents, family, whoever, somebody, you know, people in your life, it's like, I didn't want to take that for granted. So going home was a lot of just conversations and like playing a board game, taking a walk, but being able to really know how someone is doing and know about the friends, the office drama, trying new recipes, like baking with my mom, but not baking like the most amazing Thanksgiving dinner, but just trying a new gluten-free recipe because it was fun. And that was what the activity was. And then you make so many memories that will last you a lifetime when that person's not here, when you're able to just have those really small, low pressure, low stakes moments where you just see the beauty of regular life. Like, life is always happening in the present moment. It doesn't have to be overly constructed. It doesn't have to be YOLO, over the top, you know, going. And I just had a lot of those really beautiful moments being with my family and visiting my friends that I hadn't seen in years that, you know, live in the town where I grew up, and going for coffee and then seeing them again, and then going for a walk and then seeing them again because I'm here for a while, and really rebuilding a connection with that consistency and just knowing how they're doing, meeting their kids or getting to know their kids. I think that's a thing for me as a single person too. Most of my friends have kids, and or a lot of them do, and I might know their names. I might know how old they are, but I don't know them. And I sure as heck don't have memories with them. But this is like a really huge part of my friends' lives. And when I'm slowing down, I actually get to know the people in their life beyond just the names and the faces and the ages.
In 2022, the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics authorized something called the Time Use Survey. Now, this survey, of course, was done by the U.S. on U.S. citizens. And I just want to note that for our international listeners out there, because every culture is different. But I would imagine that there are a lot of similarities. Now, the study overall is super fascinating. There's so much data in there. It shows how many hours we're spending watching TV, using social media, but it also shows how much time is spent cleaning or caregiving or on meal prep. It is very, very interesting to look through, and I will link it in the show notes if you want to go dig through it yourself. But the portion of the study that I was particularly interested in is the portion of the study where they talk about how much time are we spending with various groups of people in our lives. And there are some visuals for this. And when you look at them, they're kind of shocking because you think to yourself, gosh, these are some of my most important people. I'm spending how much time with them? But when you also look at it, you think, yeah, this makes sense, right? Because when you look at, let's say, the coworkers, for example, when you hit your prime working years, your coworkers are pretty high on that chart. And then over time, through the decades, as you move through retirement, that number gets lower and lower. When you meet a partner, that line jumps up and then continues pretty high. When you have kids, that line hits pretty near the top. But as your kids get older and more independent and then move out of the house, that line drops lower. Now, friends, increase in your teens and 20s, but when you hit your 30s, the chart shows that there is a pretty steady decline, that friendship dip where those friends ride down to the bottom of the chart, which is where they stay for the rest of your life. Now, why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because today's episode is really about this idea of breaking out of autopilot, about being intentional and making choices, even if they're a little bit out there, that align with your priorities. It's about not just saying these people matter to me, but using your time, energy, attention, resources to find more time with those people. And that's what we're doing here. We are trying to disrupt this chart. And there are so many ways that you can do that. As Katrina's talking about, you can take a career break and go live near family and friends for a while. But you also could decide to live in a more communal living situation, or decide to talk with your family and live in a multi-generational house. There are other life choices out there that are going to firmly impact this chart, such as deciding whether or not to be in a long-term committed relationship or have kids. At the end of the day, I really do think there are so many opportunities, like Katrina is saying here in this episode, to be really intentional about finding pockets of time. And I'm going to share with you a personal goal of mine, one that I really haven't talked about publicly. But Michael and I met when we were 20. So my partner line on my personal chart jumps up about a decade earlier than what the study shows. And if I look back on my 20s, I don't really have many regrets. But something I do wish I had had the opportunity to do was travel a bit more with friends and find those longer extended periods of time. I also wish that I had lived in like a bigger city, one of those like world cities, New York, or maybe London or Paris. I've always wanted to do that. And I realized recently that it'd be really fun to mix those two goals together, that it would be really cool for me to make it a goal to be able to rent some sort of apartment in one of those cities and move there for 3 months and tell any of my friends that they are welcome to come, whether that's for a few days or a week. Oh my gosh, like a couple weeks, a month. It'd be so much fun. And it would allow me to carve out some time for some people that really matter to me, that currently I maybe see a few days a year. And suddenly we could carve out these really amazing memories and a week or two of time together. And when I tell people, the few people I have told about this, I quite often get asked like, oh, well, what about Michael? And he's welcome to come visit. I would love for him to be a part of this. But when we look at this chart and I just have people asking like, well, what about Michael? It's like, why are we on such autopilot? Michael and I met when we were 20. I am hoping we are together till we're in our 80s plus. So I'm going to have 60 plus years. His line is so high. And I'm talking about carving out 3 months to bump some other people who really matter to me up in my chart to maybe double or triple or quadruple the amount of time I would have otherwise spent with them. I think it is really cool to think outside the box and to think long term. I'm obviously not going to do this right now, but I think it's a really fun goal for me to hold on to and to build towards that aligns with something that is a huge priority in my life.
Yeah, there's something so different. Like the kids is a great example, right? Normally, a lot of people would, you'd get together with your friends, you'd get on a call, you'd go to coffee, and you would hear your friends maybe tell stories about their kids. Mm-hmm. And that is completely different than actually spending time with the kids and developing your own relationship with them and getting to, I don't know, stand there in the backyard watching your friend's kids play next to your friend and be like, oh my gosh, that's what you were telling me about. It's an entirely different experience that I think is so worth prioritizing. And I really do think that a lot of people get like drained by the fact that we are constantly living kind of in the past with our friends, that you're retelling old stories, but also when you do get together for that coffee date and you're catching up with one another, that really means you're just having this whole conversation where you're only sort of present because the entire conversation is about filling each other in on the past.
So true. Yeah.
There's something so different about like existing in the present with each other and actually making new memories together. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, this is a silly story and kind of gross, but it's so true. And my friend will kill me. I won't use any names, but you know, one of my friends, she has two like teenage boys and I know of them. Like we lived in Minnesota at the same time for, you know, like when I was working before I took my break, right before I took my break, but I hadn't seen her kids in years. And, you know, you just don't know people. And spending time with them, there was this time that they took me on this amazing, you know, like I was just there hanging out at their house, like in regular people land during a regular yep. week. And they took me on this tour of San Francisco and one of their kids farted in the car. And I was sitting in the back seat between these two boys and I didn't know who did it. And it was just like, it was like dead silent. And then everyone started laughing. But it's like these moments that mm-hmm. like, I will remember that. And we still joke about that. But like, I remember that. But it's like getting to know people in real life with silly, mm-hmm. ridiculous moments and making memories that when everything's overly constructed or super, like you said, like sometimes it can even be sterile. It's like, let me leave the distractions, i.e. my family or, you know, like my life at home so I can be present for you for coffee for 60 minutes. It's like you're just seeing their life integrated and you get to have this other kind of experience that just, I don't know, it makes life so much richer, in my opinion.
I agree. We really prioritize. I loved when you reached out about this topic because it's almost like hard to talk about sometimes because most people aren't doing it. So until you've done it, I don't think you see how different it is, like what a different experience it is. When we travel to see friends live in Phoenix, in New Orleans, we have decided that instead of just flying in and flying out, we really try and figure out a way to go for like 5 to 7 days. And we will work while we're there. So we will maybe pay for a co-working space or leave the house so that we're not messing up their work environment too much, trying to find a balance here. But, you know, then we come home every night and we have dinner with them at their dinner table, whatever they would normally make. We run, you know, errands with them. We do preschool pickup. We attend family birthday parties for their cousins because it just happens to be the weekend that we're there. And then we get to see all their family that we haven't seen in a long time. And they're some of our favorite memories with these friends who at one point lived near us. So we really got to do a lot of that day-to-day stuff because they live so close that it was like, hey, you know, you want to come over for dinner tonight on a Tuesday? What are you doing? Are you running errands? Oh, I'll come meet you, whatever. We can't do that because I live far away. And so I think about it and now it's like I could fly in for 2 to 3 days and kind of have that curated experience, or I could work through. I mean, there's a little discomfort. It's a little odd to like navigate just like entering someone's life the first time.
Yeah.
It's more normal now that we've done it a few times with certain friends, but like we get maybe what, 5 to 7 days a year. And we used to get multiple a week, like 100 days. So if I'm going to have to fly on down there, we really try and prioritize making it as meaningful as possible to do it. But not many people are doing that. So it's hard to talk to someone because they're like, I don't know, is it really that different? But I think you and I would agree that it is.
Oh my gosh. It's so different. It's so different. It's just seeing, it's like looking at, you know, a box of crayons and all you can see are like green and yellow. And then you put these glasses on and you see red and you see blue and you see brown and you see orange. It's like what you see in life and in the life of the people you love, especially, is just so much more nuanced. It's so much more vibrant. I mean, I've done, similar to you, I've done 5 a.m. coffee runs with my friends in Seattle who own an espresso shop, and they have to open it up and they have a routine. And the routine is that the wife who works a corporate job on Saturdays, like gets up and drives the husband into, because it's down in Pike's Place, so they can't like park down there. So she drives him down there and drops him off, and he makes her a cappuccino or a latte or something like in the thing. And so I've gotten my ass up for that and been in the car half asleep and done the run. And it's like, I know this experience now. And then we go to the grocery store at like 6 in the morning because that's what she does. And to just know life with people, like to really know life, I think it's not only, you know, helpful, insightful and meaningful, but like, it's like they also get to know you, right? It's like you guys get to know each other even deeper and share in this experience of life. And those, I mean, those people are so dear to me. They feel like family. And it's largely because of my lifestyle, having spent these week-long sojourns with them. It's like I know them on a level where I can show up and like we can have a conversation about anything. I know so much about smaller details of their life. And it's just like, you feel bonded, right? It's like bonding with people that you care about.
I think that some of the relationships we hold the most dear are because we lived life with those people at one point. The normal of our society now is that as an adult, you really don't live life, except in a few unique scenarios, with anybody other than like a romantic partner. But I think what you and I are talking about is we still can't.
Yeah.
We can still do that. And doing that allows you to deepen relationships that matter to you and get them to that place of like, oh my gosh, I love this person so much, because you are doing moments of living life together. Like, I think that's why most people are so fond of maybe their college best friends or their high school best friends, because you really did live life with them for a while. And as adults, we've kind of forgotten how to do that. And now here you're saying like, we can.
Yeah, we can. And we should. We can and we should.
So tell me a little bit more about when you went and moved in with your friend in Denver.
Yeah.
Because I also love that, because that, again, goes against societal messages. Like to have picked to go and be roommates with somebody, well, roommates, like you lived maybe, yeah, you know, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like to move somewhere to spend more time with a friend as an adult is, again, people will be like, you did what?
Exactly.
You didn't move there for a job or yeah. for a boyfriend or yeah.
Oh like, my gosh. It was such an adventure, Alex. It was such an adventure. You know, I had a boyfriend at the time and we were like wanting to relocate outside of Minnesota, but didn't know where. And my friend had offered up the basement apartment while I was figuring life out. And he's very outdoorsy. So he was like, maybe we could be Denver. And I was like, yeah, maybe it could be Denver. We had stopped by and visited her on the road trip. So we spent like maybe like 5 days with her. So, you know, they've gotten a feel for each other, but it was still a big risk, like moving not just me, but my boyfriend in with my friend. But I was already investing in smaller ways before my break in friendships. And she was a friend that I would visit once a year. She lived in New York and she has like, you know, a one bedroom apartment. So it was a very enclosed space. Like we just seemed close. So I was like, okay, we're doing this. And I have to say, it was the most magical thing. I mean, I was there for so many small moments. Like if she went on a date, you know, when she was going through fertility stuff, like just being there and not having to be there. Like she had to pick up the phone and call me and explain it. It's just like, she could come home from a hard day and I could come upstairs to get a glass of water and I could be like, girl, how was your day? And it's yeah. just like, it's just there, right? It doesn't require all this effort. You don't have to decide that you want to people today. Who am I going to people with? Who's the right person to tell? It's like, you just have this ability to just be present to everything, the whole spectrum, the whole kaleidoscope with a person. And just being able to be present with no effort. We sat on her porch, all three of us, handing out Halloween candy to little kids in her neighborhood with witches' hats on. Like, oh my gosh, right? Like talk about filling your cup. But we made memories that will last a lifetime there, but also just getting to be there for someone and having someone witness you in these moments of life that might feel a little bit too weird or too hard to like mm-hmm. go through all the effort to call a friend or go out to eat or get dressed up to go out to eat or have a coffee to tell. You just show up in your kitchen and it's two people in the kitchen being like, you're not going to believe what happened to me. And it's that easy, right?
So we're like the house that everybody stays at. We have two guest rooms. That is definitely a luxury. And we like prioritize that because we love having people here. And we have people who stay in our house all the time, like friends. But we've also had, I think, gosh, 5 or 6 friends live with us in like transitionary periods, anywhere from like 1 to 4 months. And I cannot recommend enough to people, if you have the ability to offer that, or you need a space to be in a transitionary period, living with friends again as an adult is so fun. And we have loved having people stay here because you're so right. Like the little memories you make, the day to day. Finding out day-to-day stuff, like a funny story, our friend Mike lived with us. He finished grad school in the LA area. He decided to move up to Seattle. But when he came up here, he like didn't have an apartment yet. So he lived with us and he showed up and, you know, he had all this stuff. He just moved. So he had kind of like his day-to-day items to put in we live in a condo at that time. Mm-hmm. And he showed up with his Keurig, which is totally fine. Like that's how he makes his coffee every day. We didn't even have a coffee machine, honestly. So like he's a big coffee drinker. It made sense. But when I tell you that this thing, I was like, does it even work anymore? It looks so beaten up. It maybe needs a deep clean. I despised this Keurig for 1 month, and not in a mean way, but just in like a, what are we doing here? Do I need to get you a Keurig for Christmas? Like, but I don't want
a Keurig intervention. You wanted to have a Keurig intervention.
And we went through the whole, like, it wasn't like I didn't want it on my counter or anything like that. I was just so confused. So when he found his place and he moved out, he started dating this gal who is now a very dear friend of mine. And I will never, ever forget. I made a comment about the Keurig and she immediately was like, oh my gosh, somebody else who gets it. I've been wanting to throw that thing in the trash. I am buying him a new one. But like, I never, ever, ever would have known that if he hadn't moved in with us. As silly as it is, that's the kind of stuff that is like the color of your friendships that we lose when we're just meeting up quickly and passing to catch up versus existing together for a while.
I love that story. And I think it's just such a great example of building connections and having the inside jokes and just knowing something really intimate, right, about someone's life. Like you could go on a game show about your friends, you know, and be able to answer the questions and win because you just know so much about their life. And I think you get to witness, you know, the moments. I have friends I've lived with when I was dating and like, we came up with nicknames for the people, like my date experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they just knew and I could tell them and I could be like, we could just, you know, it's just so amazing to have it be really accessible to get to know someone's life in the present moment on a deeper level.
This is such a fun conversation. I'm having such a fun conversation with this. So what I do want to ask you, partially because this kind of fits in with your career. So I'm thinking you probably have some answers to this. For people who are listening to this and thinking, oh my gosh, I want this. Do you have any tips on how to find this in your life a little bit?
Yes, I absolutely do. So I have a lot, like we've been talking a lot about old friendships that have been rekindled, but you know, in my 5+ years of nomadic living, plus my career breaks, I've made a lot of new friends too. And believe me when I say I've stayed in their guest rooms as well. And sometimes like even in their room, because they're like, you could just stay in my room and have my room. Number one is I think you have to be open even when it's uncomfortable. Mm. So it's easier said than done. I totally understand that. But if one of your big things is I want to build more connection, I want to have better friendships, you have to be open and you have to be willing to invest, right? Your time, your energy, to be uncomfortable, to like face those fears. I sat in a bar next to a woman when I was passing through Kansas City, and she just had like the warmest smile and the warmest hello. And I returned that. And 4 years later, she's one of my great friends. Like I've seen her several times since. I've spent time at her house. Like, but it starts with being open. And I think one of the things my break taught me is that the world is generally a much kinder place mm-hmm. than I thought it was. Like a lot of the messaging I had received, especially as a woman traveling solo for the international parts of my break, was be afraid of everyone, be afraid of people trying to take advantage of you. And not that bad things don't happen, but I was so surprised when I'm on the other side of the world, how many people wanted to help me that didn't even know me. And I think that really built on my already maybe friendly, more open disposition to be like, more open and more trusting or just more interested, right, in getting to know people. But I think open and willing to invest. And you can't keep score. I think that's another really important thing when you're trying to deepen your relationships. I have friends I've called who don't always return my phone call. Or, you know, like I might be willing to fly across country to see them, but their life circumstances say that they can't do the same. And when you keep score, right, your brain is always going to tell you that you're ahead and that like your friends have disappointed you in some way or that they just don't love you as much. But if you can get to a place of real like love and compassion, understanding everybody shows up differently, there really is no score. I think it allows you to be present to how somebody wants to be your friend and wants to be there. I have people that would house me if they had 25 guests, they would house me in their house, they would feed me and they would ask nothing in return, but they might not come visit me in wherever I'm living because that's how their life is. And if I can understand that, I get to make the choice. Like, is this a friendship I want to invest in or no? But like being able to accept that and accept how they want to love me and then being able to love them the way that I want to love them, right? Like, I think that matters a lot too.
The keeping score thing, the other thing that I was thinking about when you were saying that, because I totally agree, is that when in the friendship, it feels like you're keeping score, right? Like, they feel as if you visited them twice, so they should come visit you. But again, yeah, their life circumstances really just don't allow that right now. Then all that shame builds up. And then that makes people even less likely to do the things they can do or that align with their current season of life or their just what they have to give. So I totally agree with you. And like we do that, we fly and see our friends all the time. And some of them will reciprocate that, but others have their own ways of showing up, also acknowledging, yeah, like they're housing us, they're feeding us, they're rearranging their life a little bit to allow us in, they're being open. Like there's just so many things. And always letting them know that's enough, because then they're more willing to show up versus feeling guilty. I think that holds so many people back.
Absolutely. Like letting people love you the way they can and want to love you, and letting that be love instead of needing it to look a certain way, I think just opens you up to receive more and for people to want to give more to you in that experience, for sure. And so, you know, the other thing I would add as far as like, how can somebody go about creating this? What I found taking career breaks, especially when I'm doing this thing and I'm traveling and I'm being all wild and crazy and zany, it was so surprising to me how many humans, some of them didn't even know me well. Somebody was a coworker that like I had maybe had like two meetings with, and she was like, you can come stay with me and my partner. Like when you're passing through Austin, I'm like, what? And they fed us and they really meant house them in like a real like nice room with all the things. And it's just, don't be afraid to tell people that you want connection or that you're coming somewhere or that you want to come visit them. Or, you know, like it was so surprising to me how excited people were to actually be a part of my journey. I think especially for anyone listening that's thinking about taking a break, when you say I'm on a break, people are like, that's so fascinating. I want to support you. Do you want to come here? Do you want to come out? Like, what do you want to do? And it was just like, wow. I think it busted open the door of possibility for connection to have that and for people to have something to rally around with me and support me in some way and want to just be able to touch that experience and kind of know it, even if, you know, like sort of like secondhand.
Well, I'm sure that people know that if you're taking this break, it's going to be like a very memorable time, right? Because you're reintegrating everything and they want to be a part of that. Like you're going to remember all this. They want to be part of those memories. If you're resetting, they want to be part of the new version. Like I can totally get why people lean in and offer things.
Yeah. It's entertainment too, right? Like this person has just been on an epic adventure and I get to ask them all the questions and like hear their stories and learn more about what the heck they're doing. I think it's really exciting and interesting for people, especially if they feel stuck in a routine. Like you might be the catalyst that shakes them up. And when you leave, they might start to question how they want to live life differently or what is stale in their life that they want to switch up.
I was going to say, there probably is something too about wanting, you know, if they're going to reconnect with you, being like, wow, well, this is such a great time because there's no distractions. Like not only do we get to reconnect, but there's no, you know, email dinging in the background. What a great time to get to spend time together when you're not being pulled in endless directions. So when people come to you as a career break coach, how often do you think that connection is one of the reasons they want to take a break?
90% of the time.
What? I didn't even really answer to that, everyone.
Yeah. So yes, Alex. So we do some prompts. I have five prompts. And with those five prompts, I can tell them what their purpose statement is and what their four themes or pillars for their break will be. And about 90% have a pillar. So one of their four pillars is about connection. It might be community. For some people, that's like a lesser one, but it's the idea of wanting to belong to a collective or find more people like them. But for a lot of people, it's quality time with loved ones. So it's about building and strengthening connection. Now, it might be because somebody is sick and they want to like really invest in that, but it could also just be because they have a life and a family and friends that they feel like their job has sort of stolen all of that, you know, free time, space, energy, and mental load like from them. So they want to pour back into the people that they love and care about. But I think as humans, connection is important. And what I find is that when people are getting down to what are these four pillars, some version of connection is 90% of the time one of the pillars.
90% is a wild statistic. And I'm not shocked at all by it because I really think that societal messaging tells us that connection is important when we're younger, right? They're like, that's the time. Spend all the time you can with your friends because it won't always be this way. Spend this time with your family because it won't always be this way. Like anybody. And then you get this message shift in like your late 20s, early 30s, where everything else is more important. Finances, career, finding a partner, family, maybe some passions. But honestly, I don't think that really appears till later, till like your 50s, 40s, where it's like, oh, you know, now I need to do those things I've always wanted to do. And connection just kind of falls off the map for a lot of people. which is why I'm not shocked at all that 90% of people are telling you that's why they want to reset. 90%. That's wild. Man, I want to acknowledge, if you are somebody who's listening to this and you are saying, yeah, I'm also at my breaking point. Connection is also a huge priority for me. I feel burnt out, but it is not accessible for me to take an extended career break. Like, I'm just out here trying to survive. There is no way I can do what we're talking about this episode. Then I see you. And I want to say that for most of us, myself included, it is a slow build to make this a bigger priority in your life. So I want to give you an exercise. I actually talk about this exercise in my book. And I had a version of this exercise, but I wasn't quite getting it to where I wanted it to be. I couldn't figure out what the missing piece was. And then randomly one day, I was listening to a podcast that I love, which is the Hidden Brain Podcast. And there's an episode titled Taking Control of Your Time. And that episode features psychologist Cassie Holmes. And she talked about the missing piece that I couldn't quite put together here. So here's what you're going to do. You are going to track your time for a week, 2 weeks if you want. 1 week is great. You're going to write down in as much detail as you can how you are using your time. What are you doing? Are you commuting? Are you sleeping? Are you hygiene, cooking, scrolling, watching TV, working out? What are you doing? And try and be as detailed as possible. And then after the week is up, you are going to sit down and you are going to rate all those activities. So on a scale of 1 to 10, you are going to rate how much joy or fulfillment does that activity bring you. And then when you combine that with the total amount of time you spent on each of those activities, are the activities that are taking up the most amount of your time fulfilling? And I get that they're not all going to be fulfilling because we all have to do certain things to take care of ourselves. But there are also probably going to be some that are in there that we either didn't realize are taking up that much time in our life, but they really aren't fulfilling, or you might find that you really don't have any fulfilling activities. It's just going to give you some information, because the hope here is that you can shift some small pockets of time into activities that are fulfilling, whether those are connection or otherwise. And as you do that, hopefully you can start to add a little bit more to your schedule every week. You can start to be more intentional about prioritizing those activities that matter to you most. Now, in the episode of Hidden Brain, they talk about how these activities are probably the ones that at your funeral, on your deathbed, are the ones that you say were the most important to you, or the ones that you wish you had carved out more time. I don't know what your activities are going to be, but I do think that starting to try and carve these out creates a space for you to slowly get out of that burnout, to make different choices and to get off autopilot.
Alex, I have a story I think that's going to illustrate what you just shared so well. And it's based on my time in Cuba. So as you talked about, you know, sometimes we're distracted by the goals, like going for a promotion or trying to find a partner or investing in that partnership. And then also there's the layer of just how we live our lives today, typically being really distracted with all the things going on, all the plates and balls that we're juggling, but then also social media giving us the pseudo sense of connection. And so I spent several months in Cuba, off and on over a period of like 3 months, let's say. I was taken aback by how stark a difference there was in connection in that country, where Wi-Fi was not really a thing. Like, they had it, but it was very hard to get. You had to like go to a park or get a SIM card or something like that. And it was just very complicated. So a lot of people just didn't really use it. And the people that did use it used it very intentionally. And it was so crazy. The feeling of somebody stopping by the house and just like ringing the doorbell or knocking on the door without calling, without setting anything up, because it's like literally connection is what they have there. It's each other. It's the neighborhood. It's the family. It's the friends. People just stopping by and then coming in and sitting down for an hour and just talking and then like making a beverage and making a snack and being like, hey, let's hang out, or being with a person that was going to visit other family and friends. And we're not calling ahead of time. He's just like, let's go. And we're just knocking on doors and going to visit people. Or, you know, if you need yogurt, which is like, there's like a black market for certain grocery items that you couldn't find. It's like, we have to go to the yogurt house. So you go ask someone like, do they have yogurt in? And then you're going to the yogurt house and then you're hanging out at the yogurt house talking to the yogurt guy. And it was just like, what was shocking to me is how different and stark of a contrast it felt. But then I remembered back to my childhood. So I'm turning 44 in like 2 days, and remembering back to my childhood and being like, oh my God, this is actually what life was like when I was 8. Like my parents had friends just not by the house, or we would just get in the car and be like, let's go visit your, you know, like our friend, and they have kids our age. And it's like, we'll assume they'll be home. And if we're not, we'll just leave a note on the door and we'll do something else. And it's like, oh my goodness, how different we live life today versus how I experienced it. And I think that immersion and that sort of like old way of doing it just made me realize how much connection is lacking in our typical sort of default day-to-day life that a lot of us live now.
Yeah. There are podcast episodes I have about various aspects of that. I don't have a social media one yet, although it is very high on my list, but I have episodes about third places, right? Like structurally, there are, I guess what you're trying to get at, there are structural reasons in the US that connection is harder. It is more difficult because of laws, because of the ways we've set up our society, because of we have to overcome and step outside what is normal in order to find connection right now. It wasn't always that way. So you are totally right. And the Cuba example, I mean, now I'm like, I should go immerse myself in that because I would probably have so many observations. Because I think you're right. And the thing is, so much of this episode, we don't have to follow the norms. Are they really serving us? Like, I don't think a lot of people are being served by doing it the way that we're being told we quote unquote should, like that we should just show up, spend 2 days together and go home is leaving a lot of people feeling disconnected. So questioning, like, why are we doing it the way we're being told we should do it and doing it different ways instead? Like, there's nothing to say you can't walk over and knock on your neighbor's door.
Absolutely. But it would be so foreign right now. Are you kidding? Like, if someone showed up knocking on my door and I wasn't expecting it, like here in the US, my first reaction is like to like try to look at the peephole or something and be like, who's here? Why are they here? Just because it's such a foreign way of living now. It's just so different, right? It's such a different reality in so many ways. And I have to go back now and listen to those episodes where you talk about like the structural obstacles. Cause I'm like, oh, she's so wise. And I want to know what these structural obstacles are. So I'm definitely going to go back and listen.
I just think that pointing out the structural is really important because a lot of people feel like something's wrong with them. Like, why can't they do this? And although there is some of this that is like relearning and rewiring our brains for how we're connecting, part of it is also realizing that over decades, we have set up society in a way that now we have to overcome additional structural challenges. So it's not all our individual responsibility. Like, some of this is a collective failure.
Yeah.
That now we have to overcompensate for in a world where we're already working so hard to pay your bills, get food on the table, do all the adult life things, like make sure you're bill is actually paid, that you like log online and do the task. We're already juggling a lot of balls. And now this thing that used to be more ingrained, we have to do more work. And I feel like people need to know that so they're not as hard on themselves.
I love that you share that. And I think that's a really good thing to point out and very permission giving. And, you know, to the point that you shared earlier about, do you want, you know, just those 2 days, like thinking about things beyond just the default or the air quotes like guidelines or rules, that's even being generous, right? Because for so many of us, I think friends that don't live in our immediate vicinity don't even get the 2 days. If you have 18 PTO days or unlimited PTO days, which are really like, you know, 5 PTO days, you have to decide between the holidays, your family, your kids' events, your sick days, your travel to get your own inspiration cup or your just decompression vacation in line, right? You have to give all of those things first. There's not time for the person that you really like, but isn't your family or your best friend. And even your best friend might not make the cut, you know, several years in a row. And so it's not just like, can you give more, but can you like give it to more people, right? Can you have connection with more people, like deeper and more expansive connection?
Yep. And I love that you're acknowledging that. Like, I would have put that in the intro to this episode. Like, what we're talking about is obviously something that there's a lot of privilege and the flexibility that you and I both have that a lot of people do not have. But then, you know, that leads back to the question of like, structurally, why have we set it up this way? And that, I mean, that's not something I'm going to answer. And that's not something that necessarily I'm going to fix, but probably something that collectively we should really be questioning.
Absolutely. 100%. And I'm going to offer, if you feel disempowered listening to this and being like, oh, well, I'm not working remotely. Like I can't do, you know, when I had my corporate office job pre-pandemic where I had to like be in the office, I still was able to create it. You can be creative, right? You can take a long weekend. You can decide that you're going to take Friday off and you can leave on a Thursday and spend some good quality time with someone with just one vacation day, right? Instead of needing to go big for the weekend, or you can try to meet in the middle, or you can take a work trip, right? And you can sort of add a day on, or, you know, just try, like there are ways that you can create more mm-hmm. connection, even if you don't have unlimited flexibility in your location or the ability to remote work. Like, please don't think that that's not for you or that it's impossible. Like I did it. I can just do it at such a bigger level now that I've decided I'm in charge of my schedule and where and how I'm going to work.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously work for myself, but Michael, my husband, he works a corporate job. And over time, he's got more flexibility. But we used to have to be really creative with how we did things. Sometimes even to the point where like he would maybe take a work trip somewhere and some friend would like come meet up. And you get to like do dinner after meetings in the evening, but that flight was shorter. All to say, yes, I think you can be creative. And I also think there's something to be said about if that is where you are right now, you could decide that this is a priority. Like I have another episode coming out with somebody who, how do I want to put this? Like realized that community and connection was so important that her company had relocated her somewhere. She was miserable. And she decided she wanted to move back closer to all of her people, which isn't actually even where she's from. It's like all of her friends were in another city. Mm-hmm. And she was willing to quit her job. You know, she decided this was a priority. So I think for anybody listening to this, if you're like, this is really what I want, maybe it's not immediate, but maybe this becomes your goal. Absolutely. And that's definitely how Michael and I have approached this. It's been a slow build, but career-wise, like this has been a goal of his and mine, but his to figure out how to make this more accessible in his job.
It's about priorities, to your point.
The episode that I'm referring to here has, at this point, been released. It is episode 65 with Jenna. And the entire episode is about how she really was on autopilot moving around the country for her job, which is a job she really enjoys. Until she ends up in the Pacific Northwest and realizes that she is incredibly unhappy and that the missing piece is her people, and that she thinks that it is so important to her mental health, to her overall well-being, to live near her people and to prioritize her connections, that she decides to tell her company, which she loves, remember, that she wants to move back there, even if they need to let her go. And I would say that that is an extreme alignment of her priorities. It is a step outside of autopilot. And it's really interesting to hear about her journey from being on autopilot to having that realization to making the choice to move closer to her people back to Kansas City. So go listen to episode 65.
If it matters to you, being conscious and aware of putting it at the top of your list means that you can direct your energy into problem solving and coming up with creative and resourceful ways to make it happen for you. And I mean, if you completely feel overwhelmed, you could always take a break and make a whole lot of space for a whole lot of connecting, which honestly, that was one of the main reasons I wanted to take a break beyond just traveling, was to reconnect with my friends and family.
Katrina, thank you so much for being here today. I'm really excited for people to hear this conversation. And I think it was full of so many rich like examples, not only of what this can be like for people, but like ways that they can go about doing this. And I just want to thank you for your time and for being here and sharing in what I think is such a unique, like niche career, helping people take a break and reset their life and find what really matters.
Oh, Alex, you are so amazing as a host. And it's been, first of all, your voice is just very soothing. So I feel like I'm going to come to you with any problem I have and just have you talk to me. This has been a really awesome conversation. And I feel like my heart feels warm just reflecting on the things we've talked about and reliving some of those moments. And I think it's just so important. So I'm so glad that you're doing this and that you, you know, invited me on to come share my experience and my perspective on connection, which is honestly like kind of different than a lot of people's. But I think I just want to be part of contributing, right, to people being able to experience life the way that they want to. And I think connection is a big part of that.
I agree with that. This episode has been such a fun one for me to record. As I've talked about multiple times in this episode, friendship, community, connection is just such a big priority in my life. Shocker, I know I talk about it on the internet. But sometimes when I tell people the goals we have, the things we're trying to prioritize, the ways that we are using our resources to prioritize connection and step outside the box, people just kind of look at us and wonder what we're doing. And it doesn't matter that much because what we're doing makes us happy. But it just is really fulfilling to me to hear somebody else talk about this in the way that I am. I think it's also been really fun in this episode to reflect back. Michael and I have been together 14 and a half years now. And connection is something that we come back to month after month, year after year. We are always trying to squeeze out a little bit more, prioritize this a little bit more in our life. And I'm telling you that because this did not happen. The things I'm telling you in this episode did not happen overnight. And your ideal version of this may not look like mine. And that's great. It shouldn't look like mine, but it is worth it to spend some time to think about how you can start moving closer to your own ideal version of connection, and then start to carve out those small pockets of time, start to prioritize those bigger chunks. Because if you do that now, you are building a life that this could be the difference between waking up 10 years from now in burnout or unhappy or needing to completely blow up your life and start over. And maybe you have the option. Go find Katrina, go follow her, go hire her, go check out her book. But if you don't, I hope that this episode gave you some ideas of how you can start to make this shift, even if it's small shifts over time. See you next week. Thank you for listening to this episode of Friendship IRL. I am so honored to have these conversations with you, but don't let the chat die here. Send me a voice message. I created a special website just to chat with you. You can find it at alexalex.chat. You can also find me on Instagram, my handle @itsalexalexander, or go ahead and leave a review wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts. Now, if you want to take this conversation a step further, send this episode to a friend. Tell them you found it interesting and use what we just talked about as a conversation starter the next time you and your friend hang out. No need for a teary goodbye. I'll be back with a new episode next week.